Hello and welcome to Employment Law Matters, the go-to podcast for HR professionals and employment lawyers. I'm Barrister Daniel Barnett. This is Season 3, Episode 4, and it happens to be Episode 99 because we had 85 episodes in the first season. And in this episode, I'm going to be answering the question, what is a repudiatory breach of contract? This episode is supported by our two sponsors, Watson Ramsbottom Solicitors in Lancashire and occupational health expert Dr. Sarangi of coverclinic.com. In this episode, you'll learn what sort of breach by an employer is classified as repudiatory, what have tribunals held to amount to a breach of trust and confidence, and what have they held not to amount to one? What's the last straw doctrine, and how swiftly must an employee resign to be able to claim unfair dismissal?
Welcome to Employment Law Matters with Barrister Daniel Barnett.
A constructive dismissal is one where the employer has breached the employment contract, which entitles the employee to resign and treat themselves legally as dismissed. Establishing you've been dismissed is a necessary first step in going on to establish you've been unfairly dismissed. Every constructive dismissal, that's where you resign and it's deemed to be a dismissal, requires a repudiatory, that's the legal word, or a fundamental breach of your employment contract. What sort of breach by the employer is classified as repudiatory? Well, we can go and look at some very old law for that. The classic statement is set out by Lord Denning in a case called Western Excavating and Sharp, in which he said, and I quote, "If the employer is guilty of conduct which is a significant breach going to the root of the contract of employment, or which shows that the employer no longer intends to be bound by one or more of the essential terms of the contract, then the employee is entitled to treat himself," this is in the days when employees were men, "then the employee is entitled to treat himself as discharged from any further performance. If he does so, then he terminates the contract by reason of the employer's conduct. He is constructively dismissed." End quote. Now, I've put together five examples of breaches of express terms of the contract. They're ones that are expressly agreed, which are likely to be repudiatory. Number one, a failure to pay wages, or a unilateral decision by the employer to reduce wages. Number two, a significant and unilateral variation by the employer to an employee's duties. Number three, insisting that an employee works overtime when there's no contractual obligation to do so. Number four, requiring an employee changes their place of work where that involves more than a reasonable commuting distance from their house. And number five, suspending an employee without pay during a disciplinary process unless there's an express right in the contract to suspend without pay. Now, it's relatively unusual to have express terms that are breached in that way. It's not totally uncommon, but it's unusual. The most common repudiatory breach in a constructive dismissal claim is a breach of the implied term of mutual trust and confidence. You'll have heard of that. It comes from a case called Malik against BCCI. The citation, if you want it, is 1997 ICR 606. It's a decision of the House of Lords. And the definition of a breach of trust and confidence is where the employer has, number one, acted in a manner either calculated or likely to destroy or seriously damage the implied term of trust and confidence. Just pause there. Circular definition klaxon. I'll come back to that in a moment. And number two, the employer doesn't have reasonable and proper cause for acting in that way. Now, you'll have spotted, because I let off the klaxon, a circular definition there. You're in breach of trust and confidence if you've acted in a way which is likely to breach trust and confidence, not very helpful. So the best thing to do is to look at examples of when tribunals have held that something is and isn't a breach. A failure to provide a proper grievance procedure could be or could contribute to a breach of trust and confidence. In Blackburn against Aldi, the employee's grievance appeal was heard by the same manager who dismissed the original grievance. The Employment Appeal Tribunal held that this failure to provide an impartial appeal could be a breach of trust and confidence. The right to an impartial appeal is a significant part of the ACAS Code of Practice on disciplinary and grievance procedures. The Employment Appeal Tribunal struggled to see why an employer the size of Aldi couldn't find an independent manager to hear the appeal. The position might be different for a very, very small employer, but it wasn't easily explained in the case of Aldi. It should also be pointed out that relatively minor breaches of proper procedures are unlikely to be a breach of trust and confidence, but certainly a complete failure to respond to a grievance, even with the smallest employers, is likely to breach the term of trust and confidence. Suspension, even with pay, during a disciplinary case might in certain circumstances be a breach of the implied term of trust and confidence. Suspension shouldn't be a knee-jerk reaction to an allegation being raised, and it should only be used if there's a good reason. Employers should always ask themselves, why are we suspending? Is there any other means of achieving our objective? For example, by transferring the employee to avoid witness tampering or a repetition of the incident. And in any event, the period of suspension should be as short as reasonably possible. An example of a suspension which was found to breach the mutual duty of trust and confidence is found in a case called Gogay against Hertfordshire County Council. Now, in that case, the employer suspended a care worker for sexual abuse of a child in her care. The allegations were based on ambiguous remarks made by a child with learning difficulties. They were unfounded, incidentally. The suspension, the tribunal held, was unjustified and was held to be a breach of trust and confidence. The employer should have made further inquiries about the merits of the allegation before deciding to suspend. Negative comments about an employee might, in certain circumstances, be a breach of the implied term of trust and confidence. Bullying or abuse by managers will certainly fall into this category. If it comes from co-workers, management's failure to address the issue may also breach the implied term. So in a case called Hawkeluck and Cantor Fitzgerald International, the employee was a senior managing director who reported to the company president and chief executive officer. He was paid £250,000 a year, £250,000 a year, plus a bonus. He resigned. He claimed constructive dismissal because of the bullying and abusive behaviour of the CEO. The company agreed that the CEO had a forceful management style and used bad language, but they said it was a high-pressure workplace where bad language was commonplace and the rewards were high. The High Court held that the CEO's behaviour breached trust and confidence. Frequent use of bad language didn't remove its power to offend. There was no different standard of conduct for employment that pays well. Discrimination and harassment will also be breaches of the term of trust and confidence. Clearly, unwanted sexual advantage can constitute a breach, in particular if there's a failure by management to address the problem when made aware of it. Similarly, a failure to make reasonable adjustments for a disabled employee might be a breach. Some absence or capability issues at work need expert help. Occupational health is a complex area where employers need clear guidance and medics who answer the questions that they've been asked. Dr. Joyshree Sarangi is an accredited specialist doctor who provides occupational health advice solutions for challenging work health problems. She can be contacted via www.coverclinic.com or by email via info@coverclinic.com. A fundamental breach can also be established after something called a last straw. The last straw doctrine is where an employee decides to resign only after a series of events and claims that it was one final act which pushed them over the edge and made them quit. It was the straw that broke the camel's back. Now, in that situation, the whole series of events can be taken together and looked at cumulatively to see if it amounts to, say, a breach of trust and confidence. Just as the last straw may not weigh much before it breaks the camel's back, the last event may not be very serious. It just adds something to the scales so as to tip the balance and amount to a sufficiently serious reason to justify resignation. The question is, did the actions of the employer, taken as a whole, breach the term of trust and confidence? The last straw's got to add something to the breach, even if it's not particularly significant. The case of Waltham Forest against Omelaju, that's 2005 IRLR 35, shows the way in which this principle operates. The employee brought various claims against his employer, all of which were dismissed by the tribunal. The employer had a policy that employees who brought tribunal claims should apply for special leave or annual leave in order to attend their tribunal hearings. The employer applied its policy and refused to pay Mr. Omelaju's salary for attendance at tribunal hearings. He resigned. He claimed constructive dismissal, saying it was the last straw in a series of episodes of poor treatment which had destroyed trust and confidence. The case ended up in the Court of Appeal, which offered the following guidelines for last straw cases. There are four. Number one, the last straw mustn't be completely trivial. It's got to be something worse or more than just trivial. Number two, it needn't be the same type of incident as those earlier in the series. So if the earlier incidents were bullying, the straw that breaks the camel's back could be something other than bullying. Number three, it will usually consist of blameworthy or unreasonable conduct by the employer, but it doesn't need to. And number four, if the act by the employer or the manager is completely harmless, it cannot amount legally to a last straw, even if the employee thinks it is, even if the employee genuinely believes it undermines trust and confidence. Now, on the facts of that case, the Court of Appeal held that the employee had not been constructively dismissed. The employer's refusal to pay him for attendance at the tribunal, which was in line with its policies, was a totally harmless act and wasn't capable of being the last straw. One important principle which employers want to bear in mind is that a fair disciplinary process can never be the last straw. I'll say that again. A fair disciplinary process can never be the last straw. This principle was established in a case called Core against Lead Teaching Hospitals NHS Trust. If you want the citation, 2018 IRLR 833. Ms. Kaur was a nurse. She had an altercation with a colleague. She was disciplined and given a final written warning for inappropriate behaviour. She appealed the warning but was unsuccessful. She then resigned and claimed constructive dismissal. Her case was that there had been a series of events which, when taken together, breached the term of trust and confidence. She alleged there'd been unjustified complaints about her performance, added to by the altercation with her colleague and the conduct of her disciplinary hearing. She said the dismissal of her appeal against the final written warning was the last straw. The employment tribunal struck out her claim as having no reasonable prospect of success. The case ended up in the Court of Appeal, which said, as I said, a fair disciplinary process can never form part of a serious breach of contract. There was nothing improper or unfair about the way in which the employer had handled the disciplinary proceedings. The employer's conduct was therefore not capable of amounting to a last straw, and so the tribunal's decision to strike out her claim was upheld. Now, I want to talk about resigning, because an essential element of constructive dismissal is the employee has to resign as a result of the employer's repudiatory breach. So when faced with a repudiatory breach, the employee can choose to either accept the breach and treat the employment contract as at an end by resigning, or ignore, otherwise known as waive, the breach, thereby affirming the employment contract and continue in employment without resigning. So let's look first at the first situation where the employee decides to resign. The resignation has to have been caused by the breach. But it's been made clear in the appellate cases that the breach doesn't have to be the sole cause of the resignation, doesn't even have to be the principal, the main cause of the resignation. So let's take the situation in a case called Logan against Selin Home. There, the employee raised a grievance which was largely concerned with 12 complaints about bullying, but she also complained about a failure to pay sick pay. Her grievance was rejected and she resigned as a result, claiming constructive dismissal. The employment tribunal found she'd resigned because of the bullying. It also found her allegations about bullying were baseless. Although the failure to pay sick pay was a fundamental breach of contract, that wasn't the main reason for her resignation, said the tribunal. So the tribunal said she wasn't constructively dismissed. But she appealed and she won the appeal. The Employment Appeal Tribunal said once the fundamental breach has been identified, and the fundamental breach was failure to pay sick pay, it just needs to be one of the reasons for resigning. It doesn't need to be the only reason. It doesn't even need to be the main reason. Does the employee have to say to the employer why they're leaving? Well, there's no obligation to do so. In a case called Weathersfield against Sargent, that's 1999 IRLR 94, the employee was a receptionist at a car rental firm. She was white. She was told the company had a policy of telling potential customers from ethnic minority groups that there were no hire cars available. She was upset. She felt this made her position untenable. She rang the employer to tell them she was leaving, but she didn't tell them why. The case ended in the Court of Appeal, which held that her failure to tell her employer of the reason for her resignation did not defeat her claim for constructive dismissal. She'd been put in an embarrassing and impossible position. It was quite understandable that she didn't want to discuss her reasons with her employer. It's obviously usually helpful for the employee to have stated clearly and accurately what the reasons for resignation are, but such a statement or the lack of a statement will only be one element of the evidence which a tribunal will consider in deciding whether the resignation was in response to the breach. With several years' sustained rapid growth and experts covering a full range of legal services, Watson Ramsbottom Solicitors are becoming a name you need to be aware of. From their roots in Lancashire, they've grown across into Yorkshire and are now taking instructions nationwide. Visit watsonramsbottom.com for more information. Watson Ramsbottom Solicitors. Whatever your legal issue, they've got your back. Let's move to the second possibility, which is rather than resigning, the employee waives or ignores the breach. Now, in doing so, they're said to have affirmed the contract. It's not a word we use in normal language, but it's a word that lawyers use. It's taken as a sign that they intend to continue in employment despite the breach, and it is fatal. It's fatal to a claim of constructive dismissal. But the employee doesn't have to resign immediately upon becoming aware of the breach. Employees are given a reasonable time to consider their position. Too long a wait, though, if they wait too long, it means they're regarded as having waived the breach. And if they subsequently decide to resign after having waited too long, it will defeat a claim of constructive dismissal. Back to Lord Denning, he put it like this in Western Excavating and Sharp, quote, "He, remember all employees were men in 1978, he must make up his mind soon after the conduct of which he complains. For if he continues for any length of time without leaving, he will lose his right to treat himself as discharged. He will be regarded as having elected to affirm the contract." So, the $6 million question, how long is the employee entitled to wait before resigning? Annoyingly, the only accurate answer I can give you is it depends on the circumstances. Let's take a situation where the employee continues to turn up to work. Does that in itself mean they've affirmed the contract? What if they're paid in the weeks after the breach and then continue? But does accepting their salary and continuing to work mean they've waived the breach? Well, the main point to appreciate here is that delay in itself isn't the crucial issue. It's whether the delay indicates any affirmation. If there's too much delay, it's likely to be taken as affirmation, depending on the other facts of the case. Factors to take into account include whether the employee has protested at the breach, how serious the breach is, and whether he or she is trying to mitigate their loss by looking out for another job. I'll give you a couple of cases which show the different ways the tribunals have approached this and the difficulties involved in laying down a hard and fast rule. There are lots of inconsistent cases in this area. I'm just going to give you one pair. So Munchkin's Restaurant and Karmazin. The female employees in that case said they had put up with intolerable sexual harassment for years. They were vulnerable migrant workers who were under great financial pressure to continue working. When their assistant manager, who to some extent had protected them, left, they all resigned within 3 months. The Employment Appeal Tribunal said their delay was reasonable. The situation was like that of a victim of domestic violence. Putting up with it doesn't mean it's welcome. They hadn't waived the breach. They were allowed to resign and claim constructive dismissal. Against that, W.E. Cox Toner against Crook, a director delayed 7 months before resigning in response to allegations by colleagues. Even though he'd protested about the situation for much of that period, he was held to have affirmed the breach. He therefore lost his right to claim constructive dismissal. Now, that's it for this episode, but next week's episode is a biggie. It's our 100th episode, and I'm going to be speaking with Regional Employment Judge Wade, who is the lead judge with responsibility for the London Central Employment Tribunal region. She'll be talking about a day in the life of a regional employment judge and also telling us what it was like being regional employment judge when COVID hit. That episode is being released next Tuesday. I'm Barrister Daniel Barnett. If you don't already subscribe to Employment Law Matters or haven't left a review, please do. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe.
Any information on this podcast is for general guidance only. Always seek legal advice. Please see full terms at www.danielbarnett.co.uk/podcast-terms.